The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of Talk 1230 WYTS, its staff, management, or parent company, Clear Channel. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of receiving an actual dental exam. Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kvitko. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kvitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Good morning, Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but We're Too Numb to Ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Thank you for listening, emailing, interacting, and calling in. Our show today is going to be about orthodontics, and we have with us in the studio a guest, Dr. Mark Pierce, which I'll be introducing here in a little bit. Before we do that, let me just give out Dr. Kvitko's question of the day. All right, today's question. According to the American Association of Orthodontists, what percent of Americans have malocclusions? Which literally, by the way, means bad bites. Again, according to the American Association of Orthodontists, what percent of Americans have malocclusions? All right, we will take your guesses. You can send in your guesses by emailing us to dentallyspeaking@talk1230.yahoo.com. Or you can call us at 821-1230. So feel free to give us a call if you have a question for myself or Dr. Pierce, or you want to give a guess to our question of the day. Now, I thought we would talk about orthodontics. It's something that everybody has heard a lot about, maybe knows some about, but not a lot. Archaeological evidence shows that crooked teeth have been a problem since the time of the Neanderthal man, about 50,000 years B.C. So, for example, it was the first written description of irregularities of the teeth was in 400 B.C. and was written by Hippocrates. And then also I thought this was interesting that Leonardo da Vinci is credited with being the first to recognize tooth relationships, meaning how the teeth meet and work to bite and chew food. I did not know that until just about a week ago, and I thought that was kind of neat because I always think of him as strictly an artist, a painter. So here, he might have been the first orthodontist. I don't know. I don't know if that qualifies him. But anyway, what we want to do is, and we'll take your questions if you're interested, and plus we have plenty of questions for Dr. Pierce, but let me just introduce Dr. Pierce. I should start by saying that Dr. Pierce is the orthodontist that my family used. I think three out of my four children had their braces done by Dr. Pierce. I think the fourth one maybe just managed to have straight teeth. Is that right, Dr. Pierce?
I think you're right.
you only saw three of them. Dr. Pierce has a degree in anthropology. He went to dental school at OSU and did a residency in the United States Navy, during which time he got his master's in education from Pepperdine University. He did his orthodontic residency and received his master's of science from OSU, and was the co-director of the OSU undergraduate orthodontic program for about 4 or 5 years in the early 80s. He's currently an associate professor in the Department of Orthodontics at OSU. He's a past president of the Ohio Association of Orthodontists, past president of the Ohio State Orthodontic Alumni Foundation, past treasurer of the Columbus Dental Society, and he lectures through the International Association for Dental Research in New Orleans, Louisiana, the Ohio Dental Association Annual Meeting, Columbus, Ohio, the Dayton Dental Society, Dayton, Ohio, and the USN Alumni in Hilton Head, South Carolina. He's been in private practice in Columbus since 1981, has a wife, Shelley, and a daughter, Madeline, who is in sixth grade at Jones Middle School. So, Dr. Pierce, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here with you this morning.
I really appreciate you getting up early. I know it's Sunday, and it's some people would prefer to be asleep, but I don't. I'm always up anyway, so we may as well come here and do this, right? Okay, now, I have several questions, and one of the things that I thought we'd start off with is braces for children. And I know that the American Association of Orthodontists recommend that children get a checkup with an orthodontic specialist no later than age 7. And that seems a little early for a lot of parents. I understand it, but can you explain to our listeners why so young?
For the most part, because children present concerns that are more apparent by the age of 7. By 7 years of age, their first permanent molars have erupted. Their permanent incisors are erupting. and we can get a very good impression of how their teeth and jaws are developing. Oftentimes, it's important to intercept concerns before permanent teeth are all present. So we enjoy the opportunity to see them rather early and would rather tell a parent that they might best wait instead of telling them, we're sorry you weren't here a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah, it's always nice to be the one to get to tell a parent you don't need something, right? Or your child doesn't need something yet. Now, when you say we get an impression, you don't mean physically taking an impression of the mouth of a seven-year-old. You mean the impression you get in your mind of what's going on in your mouth?
Yes, yeah, so on occasion, impressions, of course, are made.
Okay, and on a seven-year-old?
Yes.
Okay. And what's your experience? Do they do pretty well with that? Because I know a lot of parents themselves don't like to have those impressions done.
For the most part, they do. Impressions are just one part of our diagnostic regime. For those children or adults or adolescents who might benefit from orthodontic care, they have a series of records gathered that include panoramic x-ray, diagnostic study models, and a couple of jaw x-rays, oftentimes a hand-wrist x-ray.
Yeah, and I think that I remember in dental school, you know, all dentists learn about all of the different areas of specialty in dentistry, and one of the neat things is that dentists, orthodontists have discovered that you can gauge when the person's jaws stop growing by taking an x-ray of their hand and their wrist. Can you explain that? Which bone is it that appears? That when it calcifies is when which jaw stops growing and so on?
Well, we look at three things in a general sense. One is the presence or absence of the adductor sesamoid bone in an individual's thumb.
The what bone?
Adductor sesamoid.
Adductor sesamoid. Boy, I guess I forgot that one. It's been a while since I learned that.
When that bone appears, someone's growth spurt has started.
Okay.
And then beyond that, we look at distal phalangeal epiphyses, fingertips.
Okay.
When those plates have closed, someone's growth spurt has finished. And then beyond that, we look at growth plates in the radius and ulna in someone's wrist. And when they've closed, someone's jaw growth, in essence, is complete.
Okay. See, that's pretty neat, and I don't know that a lot of parents understand how well orthodontists can track that. I mean, it affects the treatment that people receive. So, for example, you might wonder why your child has to wear a headgear that goes around the back of their head attached to some brackets on their teeth when they sleep. Maybe some wear something that's on their chin while they sleep. And those are all designed to restrict the growth of, say, the mandible, lower jaw, if that's growing too quickly, and you don't want the chin to keep growing out, so they put a little chin cup, almost like a chin strap on a football helmet, right?
Yes. There are two basic kinds of orthopedic appliances. One that discourages growth of someone's maxilla, their upper jaw, and encourages growth of their mandible or lower jaw, and a second group that does the opposite. So those patients that present protrusive upper teeth, because of the manner in which their jaws are growing, might wear a headgear appliance. Those who have an anterior crossbite might wear a chin cup.
Okay. And then you said you can also use those appliances to expand the rate of growth of the jaw?
Not so much expand, but allow jaw's inherent potential to be realized.
Okay.
So a headgear appliance, if somebody's upper teeth are protrusive and their jaw is protrusive, might dissuade growth of their upper jaw and allow their mandible or lower jaw to catch up, changing someone's bite as well as their soft tissue facial profile.
So basically, you're using the body's own mechanism to your advantage to the patient's advantage to help create a nice, pleasing smile, a bite that we think of as what we call a class one occlusion.
Yes, and that's why it's important to see children by the age of seven, so that those that present skeletal concerns, those malocclusions in which jaws play a part, can be addressed properly.
Okay. And the skeletal concern then is defined as when someone's lower jaw, for example, is growing faster than the lower, or the upper, or the upper is growing faster than the lower. That's considered a skeletal problem as opposed to a case where the jaw relationship is correct, but the teeth are crooked.
Yes. So there are two basic kinds of malocclusions. One which is simply dental in nature, teeth that might be crowded or irregular, and a second in which jaws aren't growing properly. And, of course, if jaws don't grow properly, teeth are carried along with them and also don't meet as they should.
All right. And then what about the people that have these Well, I might be getting ahead of myself. Let's just stay with children. I'm sorry. We'll stay back. Okay, so we have the 7-year-old. They've been seen. And you mentioned the word intercede or interceptive. And so what happens is, if your child goes in at age 7 and you see some type of a discrepancy, you would then do an interceptive phase of orthodontics where you intercede on their behalf to prevent a problem from ever occurring. Correct? Is that...
To both prevent a problem from occurring as well as address those that have occurred and improve upon them as somebody's growing and developing.
And is that's always better than waiting till the child is, say, 12, 13, and just dealing with whatever happened?
Not always, no. You know, it just depends what's wrong. So most children probably don't require an interceptive phase of orthodontic care, but some do. And it's important to see them fairly early in their lives to distinguish one from the other.
Now, you know, we hear a lot as general dentists that people shouldn't really worry about the baby teeth, primary teeth, because they're going to fall out anyway. And I know that primary teeth have a very important function when it comes to orthodontic care. And can you kind of expand on the importance of primary teeth and how it affects a person's need for orthodontic care down the road?
I guess from our standpoint, one concern is the premature loss of primary teeth, not all of them. But those that are posterior, if primary teeth are lost prematurely, oftentimes arch length of space can be lost, and a child deserves and requires space maintenance until their permanent dentition is complete.
So if they lose a primary or a baby tooth too soon, their general dentist needs to assure, or they need to assure that their general dentist is placing a little appliance called a space maintainer, which holds that space.
Yes, for most teeth, but not all. Usually upper second deciduous molars, lower deciduous second molars, posterior primary teeth, as well as lower primary cuspids.
Okay, so everything but the front four?
For the most part, yes.
Okay, so parents, if you're listening, and I know you are, remember that if the front four upper teeth and lower teeth, baby teeth, fall out prematurely, you don't have to worry about that. And that happens sometimes where your child maybe slips and falls and hits their mouth on a coffee table or something. Tooth either gets knocked out or it turns gray or purple or pink or brown and dies. If it has to be lost, the only thing it will affect is their photographs. On the other hand, if a back tooth, primary tooth, is lost due to decay or some traumatic incident, it needs to be, or rather the space that it was holding needs to be handled, and you can prevent, I would assume, you can actually prevent the need for orthodontic care by the simple action of having a space maintainer put in.
And of course, they should just check with their primary care dentist if they have concerns or questions.
Okay. Now you have the 7-year-old, and some of them then do need care. How long is the typical orthodontic treatment on a 7-year-old? How long does that usually last?
You would think at least 6 months, perhaps as long as 12, depending upon what's being addressed. Those children that wear orthopedic appliances, headgears or chin cups, typically do so for 12 months. Those that need their upper arches expanded might wear an expander for 3 or 4 months. Those that require space regaining procedures, limited braces, might do so for 9 months or so. When that first phase of care is complete, typically children are placed in a holding pattern and simply observed over the course of 2 or 3 years until their permanent dentition is complete. And at that point, many oftentimes have a second phase of care of braces, so to speak.
Uh-huh. Okay. So that's nice to know that your child at 7 isn't going to be in braces for 2 years. It'll be 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, maybe as much as a year. And then that phase is over until more growth has occurred.
Yes.
Okay. It is time to go to a break. And when we come back, we'll give some guesses that we received for the question of the day, which, by the way, is according to the American Association of Orthodontists, what percent of Americans have malocclusions? You're listening to Talk 1230 WYTS, Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, and we'll be right back.
So hear me when I'm saying, smiling faces, smiling faces.
Welcome back to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Thanks for joining us this morning. Your emails are welcome, and your telephone calls are welcome at 821-1230, and the emails to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. We're speaking about orthodontics this morning. We're speaking with orthodontist Dr. Mark Pierce. Dr. Pierce is an orthodontist here in Central Ohio in Columbus, has a couple locations. He is the past president of the Ohio Association of Orthodontists. Very, very active in organized orthodontics. And he's nice enough to get up early and come into the studio with me this morning. And so we were talking about children and how their first visit should be at age 7 and the kinds of things that parents might hear and how important it is to maintain the spaces if teeth are lost prematurely. And so now I'd like to kind of move forward into, you have 7, and then what age would be the next time that someone should bring their child to the orthodontist?
Much of what we do depends upon when a child presents or an adolescent presents for care. So I suppose we'd prefer to see them at age 6 or 7, and then beyond that, it just depends upon when their parents happen to bring them in. For the most part, traditional braces, so to speak, full appliances, upper and lower, don't begin until permanent dentition is complete, which is, depending upon the child, between the ages of 11 and perhaps 13.
Okay, 11 would tend to be more often girls than boys because of the earlier development?
Yes, usually.
So a young girl would be 11, approximately, and a boy somewhere in the neighborhood of 12, 13, although you can bring them all in at 11 and see. So from age 7 then to 11, there's that four-year period where there's absolutely no reason to bring your child to an orthodontist, or is it still, let's say you haven't gone at 7, it's still a good idea when you think about it, or if you're listening to the show today, you might have a child that's 8, 9, or 10. Should they bring them?
Yes, I suppose if they haven't presented for care at 7, 8 is next best, and then 9, and 10, and 11. And
so just because you missed 7 doesn't mean you have to wait till 11?
No, not at all.
And there might be some things that they will find, or you might find, that should still be addressed prior to full braces, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Probably 30% of those patients we see before their permanent dentition is complete, require some kind of care. And even those that don't require care, it's nice to follow them.
Okay. And follow them means you get those initial records. You might have them in, once a year? How often do you have them in as a follow?
Again, it depends. On occasion, every 6 months or so, it's just nice to see them and follow them and assure parents that nothing needs to be done at that moment in time.
Okay. Which, like you said earlier, and I agree with, it's very nice as a dentist to be able to say to a parent, your child's healthy. They don't need anything, at least yet. In my case, they don't have any cavities. That's so much nicer to be able to say to somebody. Because, let's face it, there are plenty of people out there with decay, with crooked teeth. We get more of that than the ones that come in and say, you're fine. So 3 out of my 4 children needed braces, and maybe 3 out of 4 of yours will too. So give it some thought, because, see, braces aren't just for a pleasant smile. In fact, probably the reason they're even covered by insurance is because they aren't necessarily thought of as cosmetics. So we all know it enhances cosmetic appearance, but can you talk a little bit about the other aspects of oral health that orthodontics will help with?
Cosmetics is probably the biggest concern of all of our patients, adolescents as well as adults, parents concerned about their children and how their teeth appear. We as orthodontists, though, have a second mission, and that's to improve occlusions, or the way teeth touch, the way they bite. And that perhaps long-term is more important than cosmetic concerns.
So the teeth that are straight are easier to clean. They can chew their food better, right?
Yes, and they simply function better, so long-term, teeth that occlude better oftentimes experience less periodontal disease. They're easier to restore in the face of premature tooth loss. They simply last longer and function better, and they're more stable long-term.
And if you can picture in your mind for a minute a fence post that is crooked, maybe at a 45-degree angle, and you could easily see that if you took a sledgehammer, for example, and hit the top of that fence post, you would quickly knock it over. If you took the same fence post and it was straight upright, and you hit the top of it with a sledgehammer, it would do nothing but maybe push it straighter down into the ground, maybe, which would actually make it stronger. And so straight teeth would be relative to that straight fence post, and a crooked tooth laying over on its side is more vulnerable to being pushed out over time by the opposing tooth as it comes together.
Yes, then beyond that, there are concerns about premature tooth wear. So those patients that present deep anterior vertical overbites, lower incisors, occluding palatal mucosa, oftentimes wear their teeth prematurely. And it's a gradual process, but takes its toll as someone matures. those teeth that don't meet properly are also subject to forces of occlusion that allow them not to be stable long-term. Thinking about your fence post, if one post is missing, the others tend to collapse around it, and things gradually worsen as time goes on.
So something as simple as losing a tooth prematurely, or choosing to have it extracted instead of saved, can take the teeth on either side then, and have them lean inward to that space, and now you've got two crooked fence posts where you didn't before.
And then beyond that, those teeth that oppose that tooth that happened to be lost prematurely tend to extrude or grow into that extraction site long term.
Mm-hmm. Because everything is interactive. Teeth are in a dynamic relationship where they're always moving or wanting to move, and they don't as long as they have their friends on either side and their friend that they bite on, on top or bottom. Before we go to a break, let me just give some guesses that we've had for our question of the day. Mick sent in a guess of 65%, Josh 80%, and Shirley guessed 98%. We are going to go to a break now. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion about orthodontics and youngsters. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS, and we'll be right back.
Smile a little smile for me, Rosemary.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but we're just too numb to ask. So I figure you're sitting at home, you're in your car, you're not numb right now, unless you're still kind of hungover from last night. And so what a great opportunity to get your questions answered. Call us at 821-1230 or email us to dentallyspeaking on talk1230@yahoo.com. All right, so we're talking about orthodontics with Dr. Mark Pierce, who's in the studio with us. And we were talking about the first visit to an orthodontist, which is at about age 7, and then the next visit around age 11 to 13. And so let's say that you've gone to the orthodontist now, and your child is 11, 12, or 13, and it's determined that they're going to need braces. Now, I think there are a couple things that maybe strike fear in people's hearts at that moment. If it's the parent, it might be the cost. If it's the child, it might be the notion that they might have to have some teeth extracted, because they've heard that when you have braces, you have to have about 4 teeth out. So is that true?
You know, things go back and forth. Years ago, no patients had teeth removed whatsoever. And we found that simply didn't work oftentimes because teeth relapsed. They were moved into positions that simply weren't stable, and their jaws couldn't accommodate them. In the 1940s, we rebounded and went entirely the other way, where most patients had teeth extracted, usually two upper, two lower, bicuspids, and spaces closed. And those patients probably weren't all treated as they should have been. As things stand today, on occasion, we do remove permanent teeth, but not as often as we used to. Probably 20% of our patients benefit from extractions.
And when you say first bicuspids, those are the teeth right behind the corner teeth, the canines, the cuspids, the fang teeth, if you will, for people that are trying to figure out where the first bicuspids are.
Yes, the fourth or fifth teeth from the center.
Okay.
On occasion, two teeth, on occasion, four. But
okay.
Again, not very often, maybe 20% of our patients
need the extractions.
They do, to have a result that's in harmony with their facial profiles.
Now, when you extract 4 teeth, don't you have spaces you have to close? I mean, aren't you creating more of a problem?
We do have spaces, but those spaces are used to advantage by aligning other teeth. Those patients that present mild to moderate crowding or perhaps severe crowding oftentimes need teeth removed to simply accommodate the alignment of the others, especially if their soft tissue facial profiles are full. If their lips are full, their profiles are convex. If teeth aren't removed, others can be aligned, but they tend to be quite protrusive, and it's simply not a good aesthetic look. And beyond that, teeth aren't stable long term.
Okay, so I mean, basically after all the x-rays and the models and everything and the growth plate exam, all of that, it's determined that this child needs to have their teeth extracted. How long do they go around with obvious spaces? I mean, I imagine that would be unsightly.
I don't know if they are obvious. Extractions are done in posterior quadrants, and with the presence of orthodontic appliances, of braces, most extraction sites aren't typically visible. For those adults that need extractions, on occasion, products are placed, small plastic teeth, along their arch wires as a part of their braces, to mask those extraction sites until spaces are smaller.
Now, I mentioned that one of the shocks that the parents feel is the cost, and not asking you to quote your fee, but could you give me a range of pricing for our listeners as to what they might expect that would cost for their child to have braces?
You know, it just depends upon any individual's needs, so all of our fee schedules are based upon those malocclusions that present. Payments are extended over the course of someone's care, whether that means 12 months or 18 months or 24. Insurance typically covers 15 to 25% of our total fee. I suppose here in Columbus, in the Midwest, an average typical fee for full care, upper and lower braces over the course of a year and a half or 2 years, might range between $4,500 and $6,000.
Okay, that's the range that I had heard. And but what you're saying is even if you don't have insurance, it's spread out over the number of months they're in treatment. So if, say, that $6,000 case over 2 years, I can't do the math in my head, but $6,000 divided by 24 might be something like $50, $60 a month, or am I wrong? Let me think about that. No, I'm definitely wrong. Well, maybe I'll do the math later and we'll figure it out. But obviously, $100 a month times 24 is $2,400, so it'd be twice that would be $4,800. So about a couple hundred dollars, maybe $230 a month, would get somebody their child's treatment.
Perhaps with a down payment, I believe, of about 10 or 20%, depending upon the practice. So it's affordable for most families here in Central Ohio, I think.
And I think that people consider, they understand when your child is born, there are certain things you think about. One is college education. One is, am I going to have to pay for the wedding for my new baby daughter? And another is, what if she needs braces? And so I think parents these days start planning for the eventuality of having braces done, and then I guess if their child doesn't need it, then they can go to Aruba or something.
A smile is just a great gift to give a child, as well as to yourself if you're an adult.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with that. It'll just completely change an individual. And in the case of a child, they'll turn out to be a whole different individual than they would have if they had had if you had allowed their teeth to stay crooked. So you can really do your child a favor, give them a much better start on life if you get their teeth straightened for them if they need it. Okay, so now we've gotten over the shock of the cost, we've gotten over the shock of the extractions, and I mean, I actually do those extractions, and we've worked together on cases where you'll send me a note that says, please extract these four teeth or these two teeth, and when I see these people, literally, when I see them for their six-month cleaning, I'm amazed at how much those newly created spaces are actually closed. I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit for closing those gaps so fast that even if they were an aesthetic concern at the day that I did the extractions, that doesn't stay that way for very long. It seems like you're able to pretty much close those gaps in the first 6 months to where they're not all that noticeable.
Things move very, very quickly anymore with the advent of new appliances. Orthodontics has changed so much over the course of the past 20 years. It simply isn't the way it used to be. Appliances now are smaller, cleaner, more aesthetic. Arch wires that move teeth are made of different materials, and treatment simply proceeds much, much quicker.
That's really neat. We do have to go to another break. Let me just give out a couple of guesses that we received for our question of the day, which is, according to the American Association of Orthodontists, what percent of Americans have malocclusions, which is defined as bad bites? Walter has guessed 88%. Cindy guessed 78%, and Heather 52%. Also, I'd like to let everyone know that our show is available by podcast by going to www.talk1230wyts.com and just click on there, hold your mouse over the on-air button to find Dr. Kvitko. Click on that, it takes you to my podcast page, or to my page, which then you can get to the podcast page. And each show is available about 30 minutes after we go off the air. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here with Dr. Kvitko.
Do you make me smile? Please stay for a while now. Just take your time wherever you go.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to Dentally Speaking here with Dr. Kvitko. Today on the show, I have with me in the studio Dr. Mark Pierce, who is an orthodontist. He has a couple offices here in town. Dr. Pierce, if someone wanted to reach you, how would they do it? What would be the best way to contact one of your offices or both?
We're at 262-3047, our phone number, and our website is, I don't remember. It's new.
Is it really?
MarkPierceDDS.com.
Is it? Okay. I was going to guess, and that's not what I would have guessed, so I'm glad you remembered. But anyway, okay, now, so we've been talking about orthodontics for kids and when you come to the orthodontist to start with and all that. We talked about extraction cases versus non-extraction cases. And there's something, the topic of the title of today's show is Orthodontics, What's Old and What's New. And one of the things that I know is new is known as TADS, T-A-D, stands for Temporary Anchoring Device. And could you talk a little bit about that technology and how it's been incorporated into orthodontic care?
TADS are new as of the past, perhaps 18 months or so. On occasion, as teeth are moved or groups of teeth are moved, anchorage is important. And that is, we want to move one tooth or a group of teeth as opposed to others. And TADS allow us to make better use of that ability. So they help support particular tooth movements. TADS are simply small implants that are placed along upper arches or lower arches, buccal or lingual, that allow us to track particular teeth in directions that we'd like to.
Okay, so, well, anyone who's ever been on a boat will grasp this. So just for a moment, picture yourself. You're on a boat, and you have another boat right next to you, and you want to push that boat away from you because you don't want them to, we want them to move, not you. And if you lean over and you push their boat, it's just as likely that your boat's going to be the one to move. And that's the problem that orthodontists face in moving teeth, is you only want a certain tooth to move. You don't want this other one to move. And so you have to have an anchor point. And that's why it's the back teeth, the molars, the strong teeth, are usually the ones with the bands on them. Because those are the anchor. Those are the ones that don't move, at least most of the time. And you use those to push the others around. Well, if you either don't have a tooth in the right position, or you're trying to move what would normally be an anchor tooth, what you're saying is you can take, a dentist can place these little bitty implants, and they're kind of at a cross section, or I'm sorry, what am I trying to say? They're sideways. They kind of go from the gum inward. They're not what you would think, right? They're not like where teeth go.
Yes.
They come in from the side. And so it's the, think of where you, like you would clean your teeth with a toothpick, it's that angle, except it goes into the gum between the two teeth and into the bone, correct?
Yes, and, superiorly, along where roots of teeth lie. And again, they're temporary in the sense they're only used for 6 months or 9 months or perhaps 12 months, and then they're removed.
They're just unscrewed, right?
Yep, and things heal very nicely and easily.
So right above the gum line of the teeth, in between two teeth, and as far as having those placed, do you send folks to an oral surgeon to have that done? Do you place them?
Oral surgeon or a periodontist or perhaps a general dentist such as yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I place implants, I do many implants, so if the TAD was ever indicated in a case that we were working on together, of course I would place those myself. And so they're placed in, they're just kind of screwed in. I guess we don't want to get into too much of the gory detail, but 6 months later, they're just rotated back out, and you wouldn't even know they were ever there.
Yes, and like most things in our profession, they aren't used often, but those patients that require them benefit from them very greatly.
Yeah. The other thing that is new, not as new as TADS, which again stands for Temporary Anchoring Device, which are little mini implants, usually like 1.2 millimeters in diameter, 1.4, maybe 1.6 and 1.8, is Invisalign. Everybody has heard of Invisalign, it seems, these days. And I don't know that we'll have time to do the entire Invisalign discussion before the next break, but I think I'd like to get started on it. And so could you tell me then, if my child is 12, 13 years old, I bring them to you for orthodontic evaluation, is Invisalign one of the things that you would consider as an option? And how does that determination get made? And, you know, we have about 30, 40 seconds before our break, so go ahead and start, and if we have to interrupt you, we will.
You know, perhaps, but probably not. Most Invisalign cases are adults with permanent dentitions that are complete. On occasion, teenagers can be treated with Invisalign, but not all of them. So they have to be evaluated as individuals indeed. And perhaps after the break, we can get into how that's accomplished.
Okay, and Invisalign is a series of clear plastic trays, or positioners, I guess they're known as, that are made over a model of a person's mouth. And each one is slightly different than the last. And you change them out every 2 weeks to try to slowly move teeth. And it's just this new thing that it's out there. And like Dr. Pierce said, we'll talk a little more about it here after the break. So, and also, we're going to give out the answer to the question of the day. Before I go to break, Dr. Pierce, what's your guess for the percent of Americans who have malocclusions?
You know, I should know, but I don't. If I had to guess, 60%.
Okay. Well, we'll see how close you are when we come back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Good morning. We're talking to Dr. Mark Pierce today, talking about orthodontics because he's an orthodontist. And we've talked about primarily youngsters, children, what age to take them to an orthodontist, what age do orthodontics usually start, and those types of things. And so what we had talked about or started to touch on before the break was Invisalign, and you had talked about how Invisalign is primarily reserved for adults, not for children. But there are instances, are there instances where you would ever do a child, say a 11, 12, 13-year-old with Invisalign, or just not?
Yes, we have occasion in the office, perhaps 3 or 4 children in the past year. To begin with, someone's permanent dentition has to be complete, meaning permanent second molars erupted fully. And typically that doesn't happen until someone is 12 to even 15 years of age. So that reduces the population of patients of teens that might benefit from Invisalign. Invisalign beyond that might be considered not so much a cosmetic appliance, although it is, but an appliance that improves cosmetics. It doesn't so much improve occlusions as braces, so to speak. And that, again, reduces the population of our patients that might benefit from Invisalign.
I have a question here that was emailed from a listener, and it says, should I have my child's wisdom teeth removed first before braces?
Typically not, because wisdom teeth simply haven't developed by the time braces are usually placed, being the age of 12 to 13 to 14. Wisdom teeth typically don't impact orthodontic care whatsoever, either before, during, or after treatment. And we allow those decisions to be made concerning their extractions to primary care dentists such as yourself.
All right. And then the other question I have from the same person is, why do some people have their bicuspids removed, like, you know, you spoke of earlier, and yet they keep their wisdom teeth? Meaning, I guess, why not take the wisdom teeth out, then you wouldn't have to take out the bicuspids or something?
We spoke of anchorage and TADs a few minutes ago. Oftentimes, those extraction sites are used to accommodate teeth that are crowded, and wisdom teeth being located where they are have nothing to do with gaining space to allow other teeth to be aligned well, so it's two separate, different issues.
Okay, I guess inherently it seemed weird to them that you take out the back ones and... I'm sorry, you leave the back ones in, which a lot of people wind up needing extracted, and yet you're extracting other teeth. But it's for anchorage. You can't move all of these teeth, these strong teeth in the back as easily as you can move them forward?
Yes, and in a sense, that's correct. You can envision someone whose upper teeth are crowded and also perhaps protrusive. They might have two bicuspids removed up above and those spaces used to attract upper anterior teeth such that they meet lower teeth as they should.
Okay. Now, it's beginning to look to me like we're not going to have enough time to really delve into orthodontics for adults. And so, Dr. Pierce, would you mind, can I invite you now to be back on the show another time?
You can. I enjoyed your company very much.
Okay, great. So we'll set up a time when we go off the air here. We'll pick a date and time, and we'll delve into that down the road. Let's see. I need to give out the answer to the question of the day before I forget. I also want to give out guesses that came in. A guess from Mindy, guessing 91%, Jennifer, 69%, and Anthony, 100%. So Anthony thinks everybody has a bad bite. The answer to what percent of Americans have malocclusions, according to the American Association of Orthodontists, is 75%. So a little higher than Dr. Pierce thought, and I would not have known myself had I not checked. So, it's no big deal that you didn't know exactly either. All right, so basically it comes down to There are individual variations. You have the different orthodontists and their different training, and so there is no right way. There is no one way to do braces for children, but the recommendation is to go to your orthodontist by the time your child is age 7. Make sure your general dentist is closing in spaces that if any baby teeth are prematurely removed. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230. Please tune in next Sunday morning when we'll be right back here at 9 a.m.